I have to get closer to it.
Make love.
Is that? Don't think I hadn't thought of that.
Oh, a nice comment.
A lot of things are running through my mind. I hope they aren't running through, you know. I hope I'm the only one. So here we are. I think everything I want to say, all of you probably already know. I think a lot of what we talk about, we all do know, but it does seem to be good to keep repeating these things and reminding ourselves. So, the alchemy of the heart has been talked about by Hazrat Inayat Khan in many ways, and one metaphor, one conceit he uses is comparing it to the path of gardening. So I'd like to get on that wave tonight and speak about this. And it wasn't a unique construct to Hazrat Inayat Khan. For instance, the Buddha, when he was teaching, talked about remembering as a child, noticing the plowing taking place in the fields, and then comparing the clearing the weeds of delusion to the spiritual path so that the true nature could be known and a fruitful life could be lived. So I want to talk about three facets of gardening tonight: the weeding and clearing the space of hard stones and hard places, hard pieces of clods of earth. Composting, which is turning poison into medicine, and watering, which I call the bestowing of the blessing. For those of us who do some hand watering in our gardens, you do feel this benediction that you're giving the plants, that you get to be God. It's just so wonderful to watch them soak up the water. And I feel that here at Lama this year, the ponderosas just seem to be so happy from all this rain. So, in learning, every day something is gained, every day something is added. But in the Tao, every day something is dropped. Suzuki Roshi said, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities, but in the expert's, few. So I want to talk about how we make a space, spaciousness. And I'm not talking about the clutter of our daily lives, which I think it's in our mind, the clutter in our mind, and that if we take care of that, then it's like David Bones, it's the implicate and the explicate. If we clear a space, the way Sa'di translates the second line of the Lord's Prayer, Nakadi Shemok, help us to clear an empty heart space for the name to live. We look outside of ourselves, we look elsewhere, but the name lives within. So always clearing, that's the kadosh, the spaciousness. And softening, space, you know, space and softening. The word alchemy comes from the Arabic root alkim, which means black, fertile soil. So for Hazrat Inayat Khan to talk about the alchemy of the heart, that is, we're creating in the heart the conditions, the fertile conditions, for the seed of consciousness which God or Allah has placed in our heart for this to grow. That is our garden to tend. Is that agreeable? Do people agree with this as a construct, a metaphor?
Let's get dirty.
What?
Let's get dirty.
We already did that. So I think in the spaciousness of the mind, I think there's two things. First, we have to distinguish between the ripples or the waves and the ocean. That is what they call big mind and what Hazrat Inayat Khan calls superficial mind. Big mind, small mind, the yakety yak mind that somebody I know, one author calls it the nutter. The whimsical mind that wants this and then doesn't want that. And I loved what Guyane gave us a few days ago, Trumpas, the fluctuations, was that the word?
Yeah, the pain of alternation.
The fluctuations of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So the small mind is the one that has the fluctuations. And that, but we seat ourselves in the accommodating, grand spaciousness of awareness that contains all, holds all, knows all. Does that make sense? Would you settle for that? And then we have a constant self-witnessing of distinguishing. When we've gotten caught up in the ripples. And so the next distinction is not to identify with those ripples. In Taoism, they say to uproot identification is the finest gardening. Mm-hmm. To uproot identification is the finest mm-hmm. gardening. So we also want to be able to not feel... I'm hungry, I'm cold, I'm this, I'm that. That's that fluctuating mind, but then we identify it as us rather than causes and conditions that are arising within this spacious awareness that we are our true nature. Is that everybody with me, sort of? Is that working for people? If it's not, please speak up. So actually, I'd like to try a little experiment with this. And first, I'm gonna ask you not to change your positions, not to sit up straight, not to consider that we're gonna meditate, but simply that we're gonna self-witness. So this can be done in any position, and it can be done all day long, and could be encouraged to be done all day long. So don't go like this when I say shut your eyes or look down, but just relax into the position you are and close your eyes and or lower them. And I'm going to ask you to notice where your awareness is drawn. Where is it drawn? Is it drawn to a sensory gate? Is it drawn to a feeling in your body, a touch or the movement of your breath? Is it drawn to a thought, a picture, a story? Just notice where your awareness goes and go there. Don't fight it. Just open to whatever it is that you are aware of. Notice what you are aware of. And open to it, and then see what happens. And see if you can keep making discriminations between sensations and thinking and the awareness itself. And if you get confused, just come back to the feeling of the breath moving in the belly or across through the nostrils or in the heart. Come back to that as home base, and then see where your awareness is pulled next. And go there, but be curious. Is there identification happening? Is it a thought? Is it a feeling? Is it pleasant? Just for a few more minutes, a few more moments. So can people distinguish between a sensation and a story about it? Did anything like that happen for anybody where they could see the difference between the direct experience and then the thinking mind that comes in right after that and tells a story about it? That's the clutter. That's the clearing. Because we have all this poetry that calls us to trying to stay with the magic of the direct experience, just pure presence, rather than having an intermediary who's negotiating what this experience means, how important it is, whether we want more of it or less, and so forth. 10,000 flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, snow in winter, a cool breeze in summer. If your mind is not clouded by unnecessary things, this is the best season of your life. In the Sufi tradition, Shabastari said, go sweep out the chambers of your heart, make it ready to be the dwelling of the beloved. When you depart, love will enter, and God will display her beauty, his beauty, the beauty. So that you depart is the small part, the small mind, the chit-chatting mind. The other night I called it the inner roommate. That's the one that's interfering with the magic of our direct experience of our lives. And so the more that we can make this discrimination, and the great escape, the great secret is to simply go into the sensations. it to go into the sensory field and feel the experience, feel the contact of the experience. It's a great escape. It's the vacation. It's the secret for getting out of our head. I heard an Asian teacher asked once what he thought of Americans, and he said, "Lost in thought." So, as I said at the beginning, I'm talking about these things because I need them more than anybody. I'm really enamored with all my thoughts. You know, so it's a practice that I have to keep talking about so that I can keep trying to do it myself.
Aggression?
Yeah.
So you're also drawing a distinction between the direct experience and the awareness of that. That awareness is the home of the spaciousness, timeless awareness. They're really like close together.
Right.
You're trying to rest in the awareness.
Yes, if there's any identification, it would be with the big mind, the awareness, the pure awareness, which is reflective, which accommodates and reflects all. And when it's pure, I mean, the Sufis say, wipe the rust from your heart. When it's clean, then we get the pure experience. And then it's like as if Huxley says in The Doors of Perception, when the doors of perceptions are cleansed, it's as if each experience is infinite, each sense is infinite. Those are those moments when the clouds open and we get, and the magic is there, and it's there for us all the time, but we only catch it when we've uncluttered So that's weeding. And then I want to go on to composting, which I like this slogan from Atisha. This is Tibetan teachings, turn the three poisons into medicine. And so in the Buddhist tradition, those three poisons are craving and aversion. Aversion includes fear and worry and aggressive behavior and ignorance. And all three of these make us tight and hard. So if we're working with this metaphor of fertile ground, we want to be softening our heart, the atmosphere in which we live, tender. Grasping is clearly a fixating is clearly a hardness in the mind, heart. Aggression and aversion are worry and fear are fixations. Ignorance is also a hardness because in order to be ignorant, we have to turn away from something that we're either trying not to see or we're repressing or denying. Ignorance is denial. We have to harden ourselves against something so that we don't see. They say you can wake a sleeping man, but you can't wake someone who's pretending to be asleep. Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of, but so maybe we don't really want to look at the suffering that's caused by the consequences of our behavior. So we just sort of set it over here. We might kind of know in the corner of our mind, but we're not looking. So that's a walling off, so that's also a hardness. So in this practice, the invitation, it may be counterintuitive, this is welcoming the unwanted. The unwanted arrives that makes us feel clingy or aversive, and our habitual pattern is to push away or to grasp. But in this, we're asked to open and soften and welcome the unwanted and open to it. And of course, both Shabda and Gayan have both talked about this all week, welcoming the unwanted. So how do we do that? Well, we open to it and accept it fully, like a good host or hostess. And again, now we need this discrimination that we did in this last exercise of understanding the difference between telling a story about it. We don't tell the story, but we do open to the sensation. So we want to open completely to the sensation. We don't want to open to the gossip. We don't want to open to the story that exacerbates the sensation. But what is unpleasant that we want to push away? We want to open to the sensation, the tightness in the throat or the tightness in the belly, the tightness in the heart, whatever is caught. We want to feel the experience. We want to have the direct experience of even the unwanted. And when we do that, accepting is the same as letting go. That is a discovery we will find, that when we accept something, it will dissipate, it will let go. And we can only know that by doing this over and over. But once we really understand that that is what's going to happen, then it's easier to do. We're convinced that the practice works. So I again would like to try a little experiment with this. So again, don't take a meditative position, but just close your eyes or lower your eyes and this time maybe feel your breath wherever it is you feel it. Start with that as the home base. And then, let's see, let your awareness go where it's drawn. And what I'd like to do is see if anything unwanted arises if we sit here for a few minutes. And if something unwanted arises, I'd like to ask you to try to open to it and soften rather than hardening away from it, or trying to push it away, or trying to ignore it. So just sitting in the breath, and then just see what appears, what draws your awareness to it. And then keep coming back to the breath, and then see if something, after a while, it's sort of unwanted, arises. A pain or a thought or a mood that is unwanted, and try to open to it and see what happens. Soften. A grasping, a desire, maybe it's chocolate cake. I said that in case that would make the unwanted grasping appear in anybody's mind. Now maybe conjure up deliberately, if you could, some thought that you know will aggravate you about somebody or some situation that you didn't like, or some supreme desire, something that will agitate your mind. Conjure it up. And then once you've created that atmosphere, see if you can open to the sensation of it. Some grudge or some inappropriate desire, or and just try opening to the feelings created in you when that and see what happens, and if it doesn't change, then just go back to your breath. But maybe the softening will make a difference and you'll see some change. Remember to stay with the sensation of it and not the thoughts about it. Just opening to the sensations, not the story. Did anybody have anything unwanted arise?
Did you have all that?
Were you able to open to any of it in a new way?
A little bit, yeah.
Did it help you stay out of the story to open to the sensation?
Yes.
It's the great escape. I'm sure of it. We just have to keep practicing and reminding ourselves. Cimarron, anything happened for you when you anything different? Did that seem helpful?
I'm sorry?
Did that seem helpful?
Noticing the heat, it was very uncomfortable.
Did you stay with the heat? Did it change at all?
I stayed with the heat.
And did it change, the heat? Did it begin to dissipate?
No, it really just...
It increased. One thing I want to emphasize is when the story is also part of the story, or the pictures, you know, when you see his face, that also keeps the story going, the pictures. So also to... these things are happening so fast that we don't even know they continue to be reactivated. So if you see his picture, it'll increase the fire again. It'll be fanning the flames. So try also to, when you're dropping the thoughts, you're also dropping the pictures.
Yeah. I've also found that I've been doing this practice for several years, and some things will dissipate pretty quickly. Some may take several sessions of sitting. I don't know if it's because I'm unconsciously stoking that fire, or if it's just a really big fire that takes a while to kind of burn out.
Well, some take 7 or 10 years. And they do keep coming back. It isn't one fire, but it just it's yeah. Yeah, time heals all wounds.
Another, just to add on to that, is that oftentimes we associate the thing we're trying to accomplish with a particular set of events, but oftentimes that's a core wound, and if you remove those events and you haven't dealt with the wound, you'll find other series of events, and then that same kind of wound arises again and again. So now it's this person, now it's that person, now it's this. So, and some of those wounds have some real causes and conditions of long. So it takes time. And so someone's complaining to me about something, I say, look, this is going to be your companion your whole life, so make friends with it. It's going to show up again and again in different costumes.
So that's the thing about this practice. If you feel to do that some more, for instance, Simran, I'm just not singling you out, but just using this as an example. So going into that heat and staying with it, it's likely to take you exactly where Shabda just described, if you stay with it, into a deeper or earlier, and you keep composting. The reason that this is said, that it's turning the poison into medicine, or another thing they say is your enemy is your best friend, is, and in fact, I believe Guyon talked about this last night, when he was talking about biting the lip, it's the same thing. If you realize that this is an opportunity now to open and soften rather than to tighten and harden, then you are again getting another chance to bring back this tender atmosphere of softness into your mind heart. So it's your friend. It's the red flag. Oh yeah, here's a time for me to practice soften and open. And also something like similar to what Shabda said sometime this week, rather than going for the big, whatever we think enlightenment is, what I've settled for, just what same thing Shabda said he had settled for, I'm after openness and softness. That I want to live my life from that place. And that's enough for me. And so if this is a reminder, oh yeah, it's time to open and soften, then that is what they mean when they say that you've turned the compost. It's become medicine. It's become fertilizer for your fertile ground of being.
I mean, one of the things that I'm struck with is, you're talking about the good news of impermanence, actually. That things seem so solid.
Yes.
And yet by just bringing presence to that, the composting occurs. And, composting is pretty ordinary. But, anyone who's had a compost heap knows that, something rich is there. And it's very earthy. And it's fertile ground for other flowering. So that's in part what I'm hearing by this ordinariness, that that greater fruit can arise from that.
Thank you. Yes, and the non-doing part, that's important. It's not a doing practice, it's an accommodating practice, which leads me to the watering, because what I call this both Sam Lewis and Hazri Nayak Khan, in their very different ways, what I say is they had what I call the accommodating heart. And so this is not a practice of doing. It's just being with, opening to, and softening. And the impermanence happens on its own. And when it's not fixated on and held in a hard place, it flows along. Life starts to be more fluid. That before I say more about the accommodating heart, I just like to say these slogans of Atisha I think there's 53 or something of them, but I wanted to tell you a few of my favorite. My favorite one is drive all blames into one. Another one is always meditate on what causes resentment. Chuck, who just left, one of his main teachers was Junko Beck, and she always says, she always said, life is not the problem. Whenever there's some resentment in you, then that's where you need to be meditating. Suzuki Roshi said, we like flowers, we don't like weeds, but flowers die and weeds grow. So, and Trungpa said, there's no cure for the facts of life. There's no cure for hot and cold. So, we've got no choice if we want to have a. The unwanted is always going to be there, no matter how much we try to control the and make perfect conditions. So we might as well make friends, find a way to accommodate. So I'm told that Murshid Sam, I don't know if this is true, would tell his disciples not to react, and then he'd yell at them in a fierce voice.
Say, don't react!
Oh, I see. He did it at once.
React many.
I see.
Don't react! Just like that. Or similar.
Yeah, thank you. And he we do have a quote from him that says, he or she who unwaveringly controls the mind waves is the true peacemaker. There is none other. Except that I wouldn't use the word control. I would say he or she who accommodates the fluctuations of the mind is the true peacemaker.
I'm sure he would agree.
I'm sure he would too. Because that word control tends to. Yeah. So,
resentment.
What?
It creates resentment.
Yes, yes, for sure. And we can't do it. You know, you can try to keep it at bay, but it's going to creep up. The unwanted is going to find a way in no matter what.
Right. Well, he wasn't, in his use of the language, he didn't mean to control what's happening outside. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he meant, I don't know what he meant, but for me, the word inside with the word control means don't let any of those bad thoughts arise. I'm just going to shut them out and I'm going to keep on my breath and stay concentrated and they won't arise. And that's
I guarantee you.
So I just changing it to accommodate these fluctuations, to accommodate the unwanted. He who can accommodate the unwanted, she. Is the true peacemaker.
He likes all your edits.
Thank you. And then Hazar Dinayakan, of course, gave us this image of the winged heart, the heart with wings, and he truly knew. I have this. This is on the Gampas. It's called. The unflinching gaze. It's the eyes on all the Tibetan Gampas. So these two men knew about the whole catastrophe and held, accommodated that, and in that way transformed, composted all that into tenderness and love and peace. And in that way, they were bestowing the blessing So that's what I am calling the watering, this that we can take in and be aware of the unwanted and hold that and breathe out peace, bestowal of the blessing. So I'm likening that to the watering in the garden. So we dedicate the merit and make this aspiration that all beings be peaceful. And I don't know for sure if beings all the way across the globe actually benefit from that or not, but I do know that if we are peaceful, then that peacefulness of our atmosphere will touch the people who are in our atmosphere, and then that peace will spread out. In that way, those people will feel peaceful, will catch our peace, and that will spread out that way.
You prove that everybody is affected. That's the proof. You gave the proof.
How so, Shaka?
It extended past you. There's no. Mm-hmm. That's the proof.
It's certainly true in a household if one person gets a little snitty. It's so contagious. And then all of a sudden we're snitty on the phone. And so conversely, that we're aspiring for the opposite kind of rippling effect, to bestow the blessing of peace to those in our atmosphere.
I know something. Can you stay on the mic a little bit more? See if that's, we lost some volume.
Maybe the battery.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, then maybe it's the perfect time to stop because I'm finished.
I think there's more battery.
Yeah. No, I am finished. Unless there's any comments or questions.
About bestowal of blessing, and maybe you could speak a little about how extraordinary. I mean, I know I'm not making a question out of it, but just to have you reflect that with generosity, with watering, whatever you give away is what you receive, and whatever you hold on to, you don't have. That beautiful paradox that comes with, water and life.
Yeah, it's what do they call it? Enlightened self-interest. We just have to expand our sense of self.
So, I'm pretty sure that the teaching about yoga is the cessation of the fluctuations of the mind is actually Patanjali, not Trungpa.
Thank you. It's just that word fluctuation I wanted. Well, it is bedtime.
I'd just like to say thank you for that clear teaching and the imagery that you use with it. I have this one feeling inside of me that there's the aspiration, and I find myself always falling short. The knowingness of what you're speaking, and then that everyday grease trap to hell that you take.
Yeah, me too. All the time, moment after moment.
Well, you certainly didn't want to reach your aspirations.
You mean mean, then there'd be nothing to do, or what?
That's exactly right. And in fact, the Nine has this beautiful teaching. He says, if you're going to live to 80, don't peek when you're 50. If you're going to live to 100, peek when you're 100. So keep at the spider, you know. We need to be shorter on our expectations. Because there's further to travel.
That's very comforting, Shabda.
I need it to be comforting. Because
I know.
It's a good thing to not have reached your goals. It's a good thing. You know, relax about it. Keep working to improve. And obviously, when you do reach whatever the temporary goal is now, your horizon's going to receive a lot bigger goals. And that's good.
Yeah, well, just to do this practice, when you find yourself doing that, then just check in what into the sensation that you're feeling, and drop the ideas and thoughts about goals and future, and just simply find a sensory, some sense in your body to drop into, and just drop the whole story. It's the great escape. Mm-hmm. And we'll never solve it in the mind. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's dedicate. I appreciate your attention, and let's sing May All Beings together. Let's move this away from my...